I just try, you know. Yes.
You should have different types of meditation, but when you want to have regular practice, what should you start with?
Okay. So for more regular practice, day to day, or whatever, what sort of meditation practice to do? One thing about me is if you attend my class, I tend to, every week I give you a different meditation because I collect meditation instructions. And if I collect it, then I need to show you off. So, and I have run, this is just a bit about my teaching style. So I run drop-in meditation session for many years. So every week people will come and they will do a different meditation. So for years after years, so I have lots of different meditations. But what I find, the reason I do that is, I think it's important for you to find out which type of, which particular meditation really speaks to you, that you find sort of come natural to you, or it makes sense to you, and you have, at least at the beginning, you have a good experience with it. You don't have to struggle with it. You don't have to say, gee, I don't know what on earth he's asking me to do during that meditation. No. So, and different people are different. Some people are very visual. So, regardless of whether you ask them to visualize or not, visual image will naturally arise in their meditation experience. Then for people like that, I would recommend some meditation that sort of make use of that natural ability of theirs. Then others, like for number, I'm very tactile oriented. Like all my experiences are tactile experiences, which is very boring. Nobody wants to listen to your experience of tingling sensation here and there. They want to see vision, you know, bright light, and better still, prophecy about the future, what is going to happen. Yeah. So I think the main thing is find a type of meditation that works for you, and also has a lot to do with what you want to accomplish through your regular meditation practice. So, for example, so far I have been emphasizing this type of meditation called calm abiding, which I will continue. And I usually recommend people, if they don't have any particular preference, they can start with this one. Because it makes the most sense, most of us, and it's actually most helpful given our modern lifestyle, that we quite often we live very fast-paced life, and we tend to overuse our intellect ability. We do a lot of thinking, whether we like it or not, and we receive a lot of visual stimulation, you know, day-to-day at work, or just even as part of our relaxation or entertainment. We do a lot of that. So that tends to agitate the whole nervous system. So I think it's very helpful, both from the physical and mental perspective, to do a meditative practice that helps us to release those agitation and help us to find a kind of stillness or inner peace or calmness, you know, within our meditation. And I think that is very nurturing and nourishing. And give us some kind of like a different possibility, different way to be in the world, to relate to others. So that's why if you are in doubt, then I really recommend to try out this calm abiding meditation that I've been sort of introducing. And it's quite simple, but usually with me it's always something to do with the breath. Yeah. And just working with and experimenting with some of the ideas I've been presenting. You know, about how, last week I talked about connecting your attention to the body, how to settle down. So, you just pick up on a few of those, points and try it out. I think, there can be great benefits. You think? Thank you. Any other question? So far, I have been talking about, looking at favorable conditions for us to have realization, a big word in the Buddhist context, realization. If you don't realize it, you tell people, I realized something last weekend. Either they think they were very amazed, or they think that you're just having a big ego. So realization is a big word because it's used to, sometimes people, they even say that what the Buddha has realized, on the day of enlightenment below that tree, the Bodhi tree. So that's a realization, okay? Now, so I want to explain a little bit about realization and so that maybe it makes more sense to you as we continue to cover what I call favorable conditions that support realization. So I have mentioned previously that I interpret the word realization as a shift in our perspective, right? So if I say I realize something, what I mean is I have acquired a new perspective and looking at a particular situation or experience or person. Okay, I'll give you some example. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, which this center is following, there is a system, a way of presenting the Buddhist teaching called Lamrim, or stages of the path to enlightenment. So it's all arranged the different Buddhist topics in a systematic way, yeah. If you're very on, like very hardworking, you will memorize the outline. It's a complicated outline. First point is divided into two, and then this one is divided into three, and then the three is divided into four, and on it goes. Yeah. But each of those topics, for example, one topic we will come across this later on is called precious human rebirth. Okay, so it's a topic, and it will tell you why your life is so precious, why it's so rare, what you should do with your life, blah 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 blah. So of course, a lot of the time you get the information. But actually you're supposed to reflect on that information and then meditate on it so that you gain a realization. So in this case, the realization is you have a shift in your perspective, how you look at your life, your human life, or in the Buddhist context, your human rebirth, this particular one. Okay? So if you, like me, I'm a pessimist by nature. So human life. And then, you're born, and then you live a bit, and then you die. That's it. Then you try, but sometimes a bit too difficult, then you just give up. Just take it easy. Right. So that is one perspective, right? Okay. So when I say you, through learning about the Buddhist teaching, and then meditate, reflect and meditate, you have a different perspective. It means you, let's just say if you're lucky, if I'm lucky, then I'll say, this life, it's so precious, so valuable. There's so much things you can accomplish with it. I never think like this, okay? But anyway, if I have that shift in perspective, I will see that, if I want to, I can start to practice and I can achieve enlightenment. It's a really, really high one. And even before that, I can achieve, sometimes they call it liberation. Then every moment of the day is so precious. You can make use of it and to cultivate virtue. Clearly, I don't have that perspective while watching Japanese anime before I came here. My entertainment. My teacher, Lama Dogen Rinpoche, really embodies this kind of thing. The work, he practically does not sleep. He just works day in, day out, deep into the night, So he needs a few attendants because otherwise the attendant will collapse. Just keep going. Although I think he does take some kind of micro nap. Yeah. So it's always doing something for others. Okay. So there is someone that embodies that different perspective because he sees his life in a different light. And then with a change in perspective, always come a change in the way you think, the way you feel, and eventually the way you behave will be different. So that is a realization. So when you achieve it, it's not just something intellectual or some knowledge. You will find that it expresses itself out in your behavior, in how you feel, how you look at situation, how you respond to it. Right? So that is what we are trying to cultivate. And I'm just talking about some of the conditions that support us to have this realization, to be able to bring about the shift in perspective. Okay. So since this teaching the Lam Rim, so-called in Tibetan, and many topics, then you can think that yes, there are many different types of realization. Not there, there, there. But there's also another way of looking at it. You can say that the entire Buddha's teaching all come down to one single realization. Yeah. In fact, you come from this one single realization, this one single shift in perspective, you can derive all the others. Right? And this one usually is talked about as the realization of selflessness. It's very famous in Buddhism. You would have heard about it, about no self. Yeah, you may not know what it's talking about, but then in Buddhism we talk about no self, no soul. Emptiness is another word for it. And this is like a coin. One side of the coin is this selflessness, emptiness, and the other side is this idea called dependent origination, which is also another team one there. Last time when my teacher, remember Sangye Kadro, was here, I asked her, is there a simpler word for this dependent origination? Or another translation is dependent arising. Usually people don't know what you're talking about. You just sound very profound. She suggested the word interdependent. How everything is somehow interdependent one way or another. So these two ideas are related. And you can also think of the teaching to gear us up to achieve this single realization, this very single shift in your perspective from what we now, this is something we do subconsciously, not necessarily that. Subconsciously, we feel that there is a person here, somebody here. No, it's not nobody, it's somebody here. Right? Of course, we want, this somebody is special to us. Yeah? And so we want somebody to be a number one, as they say in English, look after number one. You want number one to be happy. You want number one to be free from suffering. Right? So out of that comes the different emotions, the different reactions, the different behaviors. So that is one perspective. So imagine if you have a shift in perspective and you realize there's nobody here. So then, you can insult me, but carry on, nobody here, so just hot air, so no problem, carry on, never mind, just keep it on. There's no pride to be hurt, there's no one that needs to be defended. Yeah, so it's a bizarre kind of idea, but anyway, with that shift in perspective, then it's a profound change in even our inner experiences and also how we see things, how we feel about things, and how we respond. So this is realization. I always repeat myself, because sometimes I think people just join my class and they don't know what I'm going on and on about. So I give you some context. So we are looking at some of the variable conditions that helps to support us to have this shift in perspective. I think we are more familiar with people who refuse to shift their perspective. I don't know whether you have met people like this. They're very irritating. No matter what you tell them, how reasonable you make it to be, you make it so reasonable, there cannot be any reason to object, they still refuse to listen to you. They are so stuck, they're so rigid, inflexible, out of touch with reality, with the time, to just hold up in there and hang on to their view for dear life, even though we can see that they are causing them so much suffering. You have met people like this, maybe you yourself is someone like that. Yeah. So that is the opposite. When we become fixated on certain perspectives and we hold on to it, and it's always easier to see in others than in ourselves, it becomes a source of suffering for them. Right? They persevere in seeing or reacting in that particular way. Long after things have changed, circumstances have changed, so they are not in sync with reality, and that creates a lot of suffering, both for themselves and also for people around them. Right? So they're opposite of what we are trying to achieve. Okay. So far I touched on two variable conditions, and one is calm abiding, which is a form of meditation to help us help the mind and the body to be free of things that sort of disturb us, disturb our peace, disturb our calmness. So things that agitate us, or things that weigh us down. And so that as we become free, as we calm all this disturbance, our mind, our body can come back and just abide, you know, peacefully, even blissfully, you know, here and now, in meditation. And sometimes the effect carry on over, you know, out of the meditation to our daily life. So that's calm abiding. And I strongly recommend people to at least do some practice on calm abiding, because I find that it is really helpful for facilitating change. Yeah. So you can think of it as if you are very, very stressed out, right, and you can really feel the how your body and mind are reacting to the stress. When we are very stressed, it's very hard to change. Right? In fact, we are more likely to fall back on, I've said this before, fall back on old habits, old coping strategies that we have utilized to cope. One of them is called comfort eating. Sit in front of some whatever screen and then have this potato chip. Must be very salty, okay? The kind of thing that you just, that the aim is not to taste it, it's to chow it, just keep eating. So it must be a big bag. I cannot understand people buy potato chips like this. Open 6 pieces and then it's gone. What the fun is, right? It should be a big one, huge big bag. And the whole idea is not to taste it, okay? It's a child. So mindless eating, mindless watching. Why? Because if I pay attention, then my stress will come back, will intrude into my awareness. And the whole idea is to shut it out so that I have kind of peace. That, I think that's one reason why behind comfort eating. I'm very familiar with it. Okay? Right, so calm abiding is one condition that help us to create a favorable condition for us to have realization. Last week I talked about another condition in Buddhism, Buddhist terminology, we call it accumulating merit. Yeah. Accumulating merit is like, quite often merit is like spiritual money, you know, you accumulate it. But I like to think of it as merit is something that nourishes the mind, also the body, and to create a very nutritious, very fertile environment for the seeds of change that you plant in it, for them to germinate, to grow, because there are a lot of nutrients to support it. Yeah. As opposed to if your heart is very dry, very parched, you know, like dry soil, absolutely dry, not a single drop of moisture. So that doesn't support life, doesn't support growth. But the heart becomes really hardened. Yeah. Then in that kind of situation or environment, change is very hard to happen. Right? So we want to loosen up the soil, open up the heart, and make sure that it is something, it's a very enriched environment that will support growth. Yeah. So there are 3 activities I mentioned last week. One is the practice of giving, out of a sense of abundance, not out of a sense of calculation, calculate which one gives me more merit, you know. that calculating attitude is already defeat the purpose. So it's good to practice giving out of a sense of abundance. So I mentioned why in Tibetan tradition there's a practice of offering water bowl. Just water is readily available. And you probably have, I hope you don't have too much attachment to water. Right? You never know, right? Someone said, don't use so much water, otherwise my water bill will increase. No, then I have to pay more money. Yeah. So, offering water bowl is an opportunity to practice giving without all those kind of attachment and holding back. Yeah. So, giving. I also mentioned the practice of ethics, of keeping certain ethical precepts, ethical principles, so living an ethical life. There's also something very helpful to nourish the heart. And the third one is meditation, in particular meditation on loving kindness, to really sort of give some time to nurture the quality of kindness within ourselves. First in meditation and then in our day-to-day life, in the way we interact with others. those are what I covered last week. Okay. So I want to start off with doing a calm abiding meditation. So last week I put forward this point. Normally I present it in three steps, right? I think some of you already heard this. First step is called acquiring a seat, which is to find a suitable, both a physical seat as well as a posture to place your body in. Today, my sister pointed out to me, my sister usually don't know what I'm doing, but she knows I teach meditation. So in Taobao, I think today, there's an article on meditation. Yeah. Usually something to do with mindfulness. Yeah. So, then it shows everybody sitting cross-legged on the floor. Or pose one, for sure. No. Hey, you look so ugly, don't come into the photograph. Yeah. Those people who do a lot of stretching and yoga and the knees can go down onto the floor. Okay, you sit. You look presentable. Sort of thing, yeah. So, in that article, seems to emphasize that the correct meditation posture is cross-leg posture, pantui, must sit cross-leg. So I was telling my sister, no need, just sit on the chair, kind of ready. Yeah. So acquiring a seat, and I do recommend people to sit on chair, because the most important criteria for the physical posture is it should not cause you unnecessary pain. It should support your body so that you can settle into it, and it should not increase or create pain for you. What's the point, Why do you need to be, why do you need to experience unnecessary pain? Right? And meditation, especially in Buddhism, came from India. Right? In ancient India, most of the time they sit on the floor. Right? The monks don't carry a chair around. So they kind of used to sitting on the floor. Even they sit without a cushion, sit on. Yeah. But most of us are actually not, our body is not adapted, and we're not used to it. So it can cause a lot of pain, and that pain is unnecessary and interfere with calm abiding meditation. So it's something to take note, okay? Second step is for helping body and mind to transition into meditation. And last week I sort of emphasized this idea that the transition is to, and one way to do that is to return your attention to your body, to different parts of the body. Be very patient, you can do it slowly. It seems that you are just, you're not, I haven't reached the actual meditation, I'm just in transition. But the transition is part of the meditation. By helping your body and your mind to shift gears, to set aside agitation, set aside tension, and to shift into something much more comfortable, much more settling. That is meditation about. You are settling. You have already begin the whole process of calm abiding, basically, settling down. And one easy way to initiate and to deepen that process is to simply return your attention to your own body. To really kind of be in touch with how your body is doing in this moment, in this posture. Is it comfortable? Is it not comfortable? Are there a lot of tension, tightness? And are those tension and tightness necessary? Is there something I can do that will help me to release those tension? Or maybe not. Some tension are habituated. Bad posture, emotional kind of reaction and holding. But it's good to start the process. So last week, a simple way is to just to notice sensations at the different parts of the body. Today I want to introduce another way to do that, using the breath. Okay, it's my kind of favorite meditation object. Because you have no excuse. You cannot say, teacher, I forgot, I left it behind. Like, nobody can tell me you left your breath behind, right? So it's always readily available. And when you, it's so readily available, sometimes instead of asking the question and say, but I haven't meditated for a long time. No need. Let's do it now. You bring, right that moment, you bring your attention back to the breath. Already your meditation starts again. Don't even need to wait for another day or more. Yeah. So if you pay attention to the breath, you can notice that the kind of sensation associated with the breath in the different parts of your body. So very common when I first start to learn meditation is I was asked to notice the breath at the nostrils. It was a bit extreme. I was trying to make it as tiny as possible, concentration, right? So I was trying to pinpoint, like really pinpoint, and then at one point I even tell myself, imagine there's an atom at my nostrils, and I can feel the air flowing in and out over the atoms. I think I'm really pushing it a bit. So this day I don't recommend doing that kind of this little trick I came up with. I'm just trying to, you know, improve my meditation. Push it. But actually it's not a good idea. But so nostrils. Then other people notice it around the chest. And some people, when sitting, they actually can notice it at the abdomen, which is not possible for me. Yeah, I have to lie down, then I can feel my abdomen. Sitting, right, it's very difficult. I think maybe because I probably still have a tendency for shallow breathing. So if you breathe quite shallow, it doesn't sort of, the sensation doesn't reach all the way down to your abdomen. Yeah. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And if you, as you become more quiet and more, as you tune into the meditation, you can notice even more breath sensations. You can notice the movement of your shoulders with the breath. And you can notice sensations around the throat or, and there's even sensation at the back of the mouth. In fact, because our body is all connected, right? So as we breathe, the rhythmic movement can be felt at many, many parts of the body, depending on how refined your attention is. And so I want to use the breath as the vehicle to invite you to return your attention back to yourself, back to the breath, also back to your own body. And so you become more aware of your body. And you find that as you do that, it helps your body and also your mind to settle down. And the breath is quite good because there are two movements. Breathing in. Sometimes it's good to remind yourself that in-breath, we let in oxygen, right? Which, you know, oxygenate the blood from the lungs, then we distribute to every part of the body. Oxygen is life-giving. You know, our cells need oxygen to survive, you know, to rebuild, to do their function. So the in-breath is life-giving. The out-breath, we release something, waste product, the carbon dioxide, things that we don't need, we don't want. We don't want to store it inside our body, we want to release it, we want to let it go. Yeah. So then the out-breath then becomes also a movement for us to not only release this stale air, but also maybe we can also release other things. You know, tightness or tension that is not necessary. Maybe slowly they can, you know, relax and release. Then you will find that the mind will be very busy, right? Think about this and that. A lot of those things are quite unnecessary. You know, we just kind of, we are so habituated to thinking and wondering, daydreaming, fantasy. You know. So we can also release those thoughts, those memories, those fantasies. Nothing violent, no. But you just say, no, maybe not necessary. So I can let them flow away with the breath. No. And I suggest that people can be patient with ourselves. No. You may find that there's a lot of releasing needed because the mind can be very agitated. No problem. So long as you breathe, you can release. No. There's no hurry. If you don't give up on yourself, one day your mind will give up. And then it's fantastic. No thoughts. What's going on? No, nothing. Just like that. You can hear the sound, you can feel the breath. But basically, your attention just stays here and now. Nothing special, but yet very unusual. No, running into the past, not planning for the future. You're just present here. And it felt very, very quiet and very relaxing. Yeah. So that's what we can accomplish with calm abiding. Okay? So let's do a short meditation. Okay? And if you fall asleep, don't worry about it. Okay? You can blame me. I have a hypnotic voice. And I tell people, it's part of releasing. Sometimes when you're really tired, you just release. You can release your consciousness and just let it go. You know, and have a good nap, and then later you might be able to concentrate better during the class. Yeah, and even if you snore, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Okay, so three-step process. First step, take a few moments and find a supportive posture for your body, be it sitting on the floor or sitting on a chair. The important thing is just make sure that it has a very broad supportive base. So if you're sitting on a chair, I recommend having both feet firmly planted on the ground. And those of us sitting on the floor, good to elevate the pelvis a little bit with the cushion, just so that it's more comfortable for you, and allow your back, your spine to assume an upright position. No need to deliberately try to tense your back muscle, try to straighten your spine. No need to put in so much effort. Just allow the spine to be upright in a natural, even effortless way. Just so long as you feel that, you allow the chest to be open, you can breathe freely and easily. Then, for your hands, arms, so hands you can place them in your lap in the usual meditation position, or you can rest them on both knees. So whichever way that allow your shoulders to feel relaxed. I usually suggest people to just close their eyes completely. But of course, you're most welcome to do whichever way that you are accustomed to. Please don't switch off the light. Yeah, thank you. Otherwise, it will really be a snoring party. Okay, so become aware of sensations at the points of contact between your body and your feet, your body on the ground. See if you can become aware of sensations beneath you, sensations of, that your body is resting on something very stable, very firm, solid, that provide good support for your body, for your posture, keeping it balanced and safe. So think to yourself that this will allow your body in its own time to begin automatically a process of unwinding any tightness and tension, to start to loosen up, to release all this unnecessary tightness and discomfort in the body. So that's step one. And step two, we're going to take some time, slowly at our own pace, to help body and mind to transition into meditation, to release maybe the agitation, the stress, the worries, things that we bring with us to the center, to our meditation, from our daily life. So now is an opportunity to just put them aside for a while. So for that, we're going to make use of our breath, our natural breath as a support. See if you can notice the sensations associated with the breath in your body. So you may notice the sensation around your nostrils as the air flow in and out of your body. You may notice movements of the chest synchronized with the breath, a feeling of expansion and contraction with each breath. And some of you may notice the movements of your abdomen, movements of rising and falling. So in this approach, you don't have to focus on one particular spot to observe your breath. I'd rather you try to experience the full breath, the full movement of the breath as it flows in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. See if you can identify the in-breath as well as the out-breath. In-breath, we're taking oxygen, oxygenate the blood. We bring energy to our cells, to our brain, to our body and mind. Out-breath, there's a sense of release, a subtle sense of relaxation as the muscles of our diaphragm and muscles of our chest relax and allowing the air to flow out. So see if you can simply return your attention to the breath sensations again and again. No need to exert effort to hold on to the breath, because you can always come back to it. Come back to the breath, appreciate the sensations of the breath, in particular your out-breath. As you feel your breath leaving your body, you can remind yourself in the mind to release. Breathing out, we release the carbon dioxide. Imagine maybe some of the tension, discomfort in your body can go with your out-breath. Breathing out, releasing maybe some of the thoughts, some of the images, memories, fantasies that preoccupy your mind, your attention. Maybe they can go as well. So once again, remember to simply return your attention to the breath, especially if you notice it has wandered off to thoughts, to memory, or maybe it's feeling a bit sleepy, a bit dull and drowsy. If you can gently place your attention once again on the breath, and as you breathe out, remind yourself to release. A good place to start this process of transitioning into meditation to release tension, tightness is with your face. Habitually, we tense up the muscles of the face. Some of us may tense up the muscles of the forehead. Others, we may unconsciously be tightening the muscles of the jaw and the muscles around the eyes. So as you breathe out, see if you can release some of this tension in the face. See if you can let in a feeling of softness, a sense of ease and comfort into your face. coming back to the breath, make the breath a support for your attention, a place that you can always come back to, regardless of how far or how long you might be distracted away from the breath, from your meditation. It's not a problem. Just come back, reconnect with the breath sensations, and as you breathe out, see if you can deepen the sense of release. As you come back to your natural breath, see if you can, instead of focusing on one particular spot in the body, notice the breath. Just follow the whole length of the breath as it flows in and out of your body. So that alongside the breath, you also become aware of your own body. You become aware of which part of your body feel tight, tense, which part of your body feels soft, relaxed, comfortable. And as always, if you feel an out breath, you can remind yourself mentally to release. Coming back to your breath, and as you become more aware of the breath sensations in the body, as well as other sensations, the state of your body, each time you breathe out and release, think that you are also helping your body to release any habituated reactions, any kind of tensing, tightening, bracing against our typical reaction to stressful situations in life. So now that you are here, sitting comfortably in this room, probably quite far away from stressful situations for the moment, this is a wonderful opportunity to help the body to release those unnecessary reactions. So the body can release the tension, tightness, can be a bit more relaxed, more comfortable, more at ease. So each time you come back to the breath, and breathe out. If you can, pass on this deeper message of release to your own body. So, that is calm abiding meditation. Feel calmer? I think one of the major challenges with calm abiding meditation, people say, but I don't feel calmer. My mind is all over the place. That is also a very, perfectly normal, perfectly natural. Because our brain or our mind does not calm down on demand. Like press a button, then calm. It's good we don't have that button, okay? Because all we end up doing is every day just keep pressing the button. You know, like this experiment that scientists did with pigeons. You know, they press a lever, a kind of, then food will come. So what the, or the peg or something, right, will be rewarded. So what does the pigeon end up doing? Just the whole day just pecking, you know? And so become a kind of conditioning. So it's good we cannot condition so easily our body and mind to feel calm. We need to come up, learn to work with it, yeah. But maybe later, next in our session, we'll talk about those wandering thoughts, those distractions, those thinking, they are not your enemy. No, even though it does disturb us, it don't necessarily feel pleasant. Yeah. But they are just a very natural part of our mind, our nervous system, our the way we function. Right. So we are not trying to destroy them. We actually, through meditation, we come to understand ourselves better, understand all these different ways we react physically and mentally. And then that's how we learn to work with them, help our body and mind to put aside all these unhelpful reactions to be able to incline themselves in a state of greater calmness, greater sense of ease and comfort. That's what we're trying to do in meditation. Okay. So before I continue, is there any question about that? All clear? You can find your breath. You know what is the breath. Okay, so so today I'm going to touch on the continuation of last week on cerebral condition about merit. So there is another practice in Buddhism which helps us to increase our merit. So this is a practice of joy, J-O-Y, joy. Although I know I'm a pessimist, but I tend to tell people joy is not such an easy thing to practice or to get in touch with. I don't think I'm a very joyful person, but I'm also quite sure it's not that easy for everybody. There are actually two ideas within this practice. One in Buddhism is called sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. In Pali, the Indian language is called mudita. This is the joy where you feel happy when you see towards yourself, and mostly for others. When you see that others are being happy or they are enjoying some good fortune, you naturally feel happy for them. You know, like if they won the total, the 13.6 million and you didn't, you know, and you feel so wonderful. You feel happy for them. And that is joy, okay? But quite often we also have a sense of envy or jealousy. And that is the opposite state to joy. Yes. There's another type of joy. In Buddhism, we call it rejoicing. Now, rejoicing is a bit tricky. Rejoicing is you rejoice in others, creating the causes for their happiness. Not that they experience happiness, but they are doing something that is conducive for their future happiness. They're doing something really positive, really good, and you say, oh, this will benefit them in the future, bring them happiness. So you rejoice. This is even harder than the other one. Because this is like one step removed. This is rejoicing in their creating the causes of happiness. Mudita, sympathetic joy, rejoicing in their experiencing the result, which is happiness. Which is more obvious, right? Happiness or good fortune. At least you can see, or you can hear about it. So you can feel happy for them. But we also rejoice in others or even ourselves, creation of the causes of happiness. Right? But this is hard because, first of all, you must know what is the true causes of happiness, right? And I wouldn't ask you because different people have different answers. Yeah. No, because also we define happiness differently, isn't it? Yeah. They all used to be talk about 4, 5C or 4C. Nowadays, I don't think we talk about that. Nowadays, we graduate to something more extreme. So, of course, sometimes people think of causes of happiness as material, you know, more material causes like wealth. Yeah, my chat group, my friend said, oh, retirement fund, you know, some insurance thing. I said, wow, if I have money to buy the insurance, I would be happy now. No need to worry about that. Yeah. So, but in the Buddhist context, the causes of happiness are not material, but, virtuous action, virtue, actions of generosity, of ethics, of kindness and compassion. So I always say that it's difficult. I find it difficult because unless you're very convinced in that relationship between virtue and future happiness, otherwise there's nothing to rejoice about, right? If they're not connected, what there's to rejoice about? Okay. So, but in general, so this talk about the mind state of joy. It's this kind of, I find joy is a more subtle kind of emotion, to say. It's a kind of a cheerfulness or delight. It's very uplifting. You know, it tends to lighten things up for you. When you're joyful, you don't feel, you're not like weighed down, heavy, locked in. You are much more open, and things are much more spacious internally within your mind, within your own heart. And feelings come and go much easier because you are joyful. Difficult state to be in. But if you can find joy some of the time, not all the time, you can kind of appreciate why it says to be such a positive state, that when you can rejoice, you can feel happy for others, happiness and good fortune. It increases merit. It nourishes the heart in even a greater way. Yeah. It's also called the lazy person way to create merit. Because you don't have to do anything, right? You just sit there. Oh, very good. I rejoice. I rejoice. I used to, when I was living in a Buddhist center, my bedroom is right above the main door. Right? On Sunday, when I'm not on duty, and people coming for morning practice or something, then they'll ring the ding doorbell. Ding dong. I stay in bed. Ding dong. No way. Someone on duty will go and open the door. You hear people, because they take off shoes, like chit-chatting at the doorway. I was still in bed. I rejoice. And all these people coming so early to the Buddhist temple to create virtue. But I stay in bed, okay? I'm not on duty. You all take care of it yourself. Figure out where the water bowls are, where everything is, and do it yourself. Okay? So, that's why I say a lazy person way to create merit. So, although I say that, I know I'm not genuinely rejoicing. Because I find it very hard to bring forth that mind state of joy. Yeah? So, it's a difficult practice for me. But I think it's important to talk about it, to be aware of it. But if so happens, unlike me, you can get in touch with that sense of joy. In itself, it's a source of happiness. You know? And it creates a very kind of fertile environment within the heart and mind for positive things to happen, to grow. Because you are not so tight, not so tense, not so picky, you know, you're petty. Sometimes when we're very stressed for a long time, we are like a walking time bomb. Okay? But we are ready to explore at any innocent people. If they just so happen to talk to you at the wrong time, the wrong place, they just have to say anything, and the whole thing would just blow up in their face. They're like, oh, I don't know whether you have on the receiving end, because I have. But they, oh, what's going on? I just say hello, and then I got this, or, you know, Australia would say, oh, how are you? They get this big like flood of things coming out. And oh, okay, I just think good is good enough. No need to have a confession or whatever. So when people are very tight and very tense for a very long time, a lot of build up of feelings and emotions and resentment, you know, that state of mind, first of all, is a very unhappy state of mind. And then also, it's also a state of mind where it's very hard to see things differently, to allow change to happen. Okay. So that's why if we make an effort, at least be aware of this state of mind of joy, it makes a lot of difference. Okay. And I also like to say that when we are miserable, when we are not joyful, we're the opposite, when we feel miserable, we are like at the bottom of the pit. Right? And anybody that come close to you, unconsciously, we like to drag them down. Come down to the bottom of the pit with me. To share in my misery. Right. So, sometimes, although it's not very compassionate, but you just keep a distance. Right? you can wallow in your misery. I just keep this distance. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's helpful to be aware of this state of mind called joy and to try to cultivate it. And when you cultivate it, you try to practice it in meditation, you find that it has a lot of obstacles. For example, I talk about just now, jealousy or envy, the natural state of mind that is the opposite or different from joy. So when we see other people's happiness and good fortune, sometimes the instinctive reaction can be not joy, it's jealous or envious. Yeah. Another typical reaction is called belittling. Belittle or demean. Ayah, not so big deal, lah, no. Just a few $100s. Why so happy about it, no? Or that accomplishment. Ayah, that's 10,000 mantra. I did 1,000,000, you know. 10,000, nothing. Ayah, just fill a few water bottles. No need to be so proud, lah. No need to tell people. Nothing. It's called demeaning or belittling. It's all like push it lower and push it lower. So in your mind, it feels, and it is a certain kind of it's a reaction to, basically you're not very happy, huh? So when you do, because you don't have that generosity of heart or spirit to accommodate what other people are doing, to be able to acknowledge it and to even be able to feel happy for them. Right? So joy can be quite tricky. Another way you react instead of joy is to feel bored. Can we get on with it? Don't keep telling me what you have achieved, how much hardship you have endured, and what good things you have done. It's so boring. You know? Can we change the topic? So boredom is also another kind of state that is opposite of joy. Boredom means I refuse to pay attention to you. I don't find what you say interesting, and I don't want to pay attention to you. I'd rather be somewhere else. Okay, so boredom. Whereas if you have joy, it's a very different thing. My teacher, Lama Dzogchen Rinpoche, he liked to use this phrase, right, when he talked about rejoicing. Say, how wonderful this is. You know, so if that teaching happened to be on rejoicing, that means it would be a very long teaching. How wonderful this is. How wonderful that is. How wonderful. How wonderful. And I always think, life is not so wonderful. The typical of a pessimist. Wonderful things, you know, everything is wonderful. Oh, you married, light a candle in Bogaya, so much marriage, oceans of marriage, lots of, how wonderful is this? It's just a candle, you know. So, that's my mindset, much more narrow and much small-minded, yeah. So, you need quite a big heart to rejoice, to be able to accommodate, to be able to see the goodness in even little things. But if you can accomplish it, it's a wonderful quality to experience joy. It really is very wonderful. I also found another word from, I was reading some book. It's called awesome. It's awesome. Apparently there are people who, I was reading the book, then this writer was saying, this guy came along at a conference. Mate, is the chair next to you available? It would be so awesome if I can sit. I said, oh, all right. You say, oh, great, awesome. So awesome. So everything else. But awesome. And this writer, a little bit like me, same frequency. Clearly, lots of things are very awesome. This is but if you, in that case, I think it's just a habit. Yeah. But it's those words that express that kind of feeling of joy, of wonder. No, and I really think it's a great state of mind to experience, to have. So how do we cultivate it? Okay. This is someone that cannot feel joy easily, right? So I try many different methods, and I've settled on, as usual, on a few simple phrases. Yeah, I just repeat a few sentences. It sounds very strange. Two sentences. One is. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. Sounds like joy at a distance. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. Okay. Leave me alone. Yeah. Yeah. Also when I try to rejoice, when I first practice, who should I rejoice in? Anybody come to mind? Nothing. Have they done anything? Nothing. Nothing come to mind. There is no object to rejoice in. So what do you do? Never mind. Okay. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. So you just keep saying it, like, directed to a person. Then they say to yourself, oh yeah, no, this person did this, or got a good job. Yeah, I suppose good enough. No? Okay. Now may your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. Although I'm seems to be joking, but I'm serious. So what happens is that we direct our attention at individual. Yeah. And if you're like me, usually when I do it, I blank. I can't see anything in this person's life or in this person's recent experiences that are worthy of rejoicing. Then, so I just repeat the words. You know, I rely on the words. And as I say it, I try to say it sincerely, not 100% sincerely, but with a little bit of sincerity. So all I ask is 1% sincerity. You think of this person, you say, okay, I'm really 1% sincere that I want to rejoice. Okay, good enough. If you're 0%, then I might forget about this. Try someone else, alright? But if you sincerely say that, okay, I'm going to make this person the focus, and I want to rejoice in his or her happiness or good fortune, or maybe they are creating causes of happiness. So I usually, just nothing come to mind. So I just repeat the phrases, and as I say it, may your happiness continue, may your good fortune not diminish. As I say it again and again, slowly, something will trigger in my mind. So I'll remember that, oh, this person maybe has just changed job, seems to enjoy the job. No. I say, oh, that's good. May your happiness continue. So, or maybe you remember that this person was helping out at the Buddhist center and doing something that we Buddhists would consider to be virtuous actions. No. That's also something worthy of rejoicing. So you notice that it's almost like I set my standard very low. Okay. So any little thing that this person, anything happy or good that this person experienced, any little virtuous action this person engage in, all those are worthy of rejoicing. No need to be something grand, or no need something big, no need to be something famous. Even the very simple little things, you know, we can make that the focus and feel happy for the person, to take joy in it, to rejoice in it. And you'll find that once you start, then it will start to trigger in, especially if someone that you know fairly well. Then you will know that there are many things in this person's life, present or past, that are worthy of rejoicing. So, good things that happen to them now or in the past, positive actions that they have created now and the past, and they will come back to mind and you can feel happy for them and rejoice. Okay. We also can practice rejoicing with regard to ourselves. And there are extreme cases. Some people find it impossible to rejoice in themselves. Some people are very interesting. Cannot practice love for themselves. Cannot practice compassion for themselves. Cannot practice joy for themselves. It's selfish. I cannot do that. I cannot focus on myself. It's not Buddhist to do that. But it's a bit strange. A bit extreme, isn't it? Because we also experience happiness. We experience suffering. We experience good fortune, good things happen to us. So of course we can also feel love for ourselves, feel compassion, and we can also rejoice. Then other people? No problem. Every day I look into the mirror and I rejoice. Such a wonderful person I am. You know? Then in that case, the difficulty is to think about others, not the self. Okay? So we are very different. But we are just as much worthy of rejoicing as others. We can also feel joy. We can look at aspects of our life and feel a sense of appreciation. Oh, that was, I was so fortunate in that sense that I get to enjoy this, or I have this kind of circumstances know, and also we can rejoice in our own virtuous actions. You know, we try our best to engage in positive actions with a good motivation. You know, then we can feel happy about it. You know, that can become a cause for happiness for ourselves. And so, then there's the Dalai Lama once said that if you can rejoice, you can feel happy for others' happiness. Since there are 6 billion human beings on Earth, at any one point of time, one of them will be happy, isn't it? And therefore, you will always have the reason to be happy. If you can rejoice, you can have that kind of loving kindness in heart to take joy in others' good fortune and happiness. So, okay, sounds alright. You want to give it a try? See whether you might do much better than me. You'll be overflowing with joy. Awesome! Awesome! Wonderful! Wonderful! Yeah, so no worries. I'm sure you will do better than me. Okay? Right, so let's give it a try. And I suggest, so we're going to start with someone else. And we, in this kind of practice, we suggest you start with the easiest person. Some people are very strange. They only start with the most difficult person. I don't know why they want to torture themselves. The easiest person is the person that you love, you care most about, or someone that is very close to you, that you naturally feel happy when you are with them. So this is the easy person. Then you have very little resistance to rejoice in their happiness, in their good fortune. Right? So we start with the easy person, and then depending on how fast you do it or how slow, you can just go through a few of the easier ones. And then towards the end, I will ask you to return your attention to yourself, which could be easy or could be the most difficult, and to remember your own past experiences, your current situation, and rejoice in your own happiness, your own good fortune, and in your own actions that are conducive for happiness. Okay, sounds all right? We just do a short meditation on this. So, to take a few moments, just settle your body back into a meditation posture. Try to have your back upright in a natural way. That's the most important aspect of the posture. And you might want to start with a few deep breaths. Just breathe in and out deeply for a few times. And as you breathe out, see if you can just release any tiredness, any tension, any agitation. Allow the breath to settle back to its natural rhythm. And as usual, the breath can be a support for you. During this meditation, you can come back to the breath at any point of time. You'll get very distracted. And start by once again relaxing the muscles of your face. Allow the whole face to feel soft, at ease, and comfortable. So I invite you to meditate on the quality of joy or sympathetic joy or rejoicing. And to do that, we choose one person, someone among the many that are close to you, that you love, you care for. Choose an easy person, someone that you are very close to. You share a lot of similarities, a lot of good times, good experiences. And see if you can bring the person to mind. If you want, you can do it visually. Imagine the person, recollect a recent encounter with the person. As you picture the person in your mind, remind yourself of this person, his or her share of happiness, of good fortune, of favorable or auspicious circumstances. You can also remind yourself of their good deeds, their virtuous actions, actions born out of positive state of mind, of compassion, of kindness, of wisdom. And as you bring this to mind, see if you can rejoice in it, feel joy for it. And my way of doing it is to express it in words. Words and phrases such as, may your happiness continue, may your good fortune not diminish. Or you can try my teacher's way, how wonderful this is. So you can choose whichever words or phrases that suit you, that express how you feel. And by slowly, mindfully repeat the phrases, just rejoice in the different aspects of this person's life, the happiness, the good fortune, the virtuous actions, the causes of happiness. And not to worry if the feeling of joy does not come immediately. And that's alright. No need to hurry, no need to push for it. Stick to the words, the phrases, with as much sincerity you can find. And just practice rejoicing. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. So remember to come back to the person, come back to his or her share of happiness, good fortune, virtuous action. It's easy to be distracted in this kind of meditation, which is perfectly normal. Just now and then, remind yourself to come back, recollect what you know about this person, and see if you can rejoice. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. So feel free to stay with the same person, or if you like, you can shift your focus to others around you, and rejoice in their happiness, in their good fortune. May your happiness continue. May your good fortune not diminish. And then finally, I invite you to return your attention to yourself. Think about your own share of happiness, good fortune, your share of virtues, positive actions, which are causes of happiness. And see if you can rejoice. May my happiness continue. May my good fortune not diminish. See if you can highlight to yourself a positive aspect of your life. We all experience problems, suffering. We all experience stress of one form or another. But there are also the positive sides of our life. The good things, the wonderful things that we can bring to mind and we can rejoice in. May my happiness continue. May my good fortune not diminish. Is that joyful? Don't worry if you don't feel any sense of joy at all. It's pretty common. joy is a very powerful, very positive state of mind. So, according to teaching, especially if you rejoice in other people's virtuous action, we also, somehow we increase our merit. Yeah. Joy is a good companion to compassion. Because it's one of the most difficult group of people to feel joy towards are people who are undergoing great suffering, great pain, a lot of difficulties. Because naturally, of course, we feel compassion for them. But suffering has this tendency to weigh us down. And when people are in pain and suffering, it's very hard to, we feel almost obliged to have compassion or pity or whatever. And these are very, can be very heavy feelings, right? So in a situation like that, helpful to have, inject some joy in, lighten things up, you don't take yourself too seriously, sort of uplift the mind. Because you cannot always, sink all the way to the bottom of the pit of suffering. You also need to come up for air, you know, to have a different perspective, to see things differently. Which is why, sometimes you see some documentaries, people who work in very stressful situations, like life and death situation, emergency, or deal with harsh facts of life, like you work in the coroner's office, you know, the mortuary, or things like that. People like that have some, the insiders have some jokes that are not suitable for outsiders to listen to. The jokes are very morbid or very extreme, seems totally inappropriate. But sometimes when you, day in, day out, confronting with the harsh realities of life, you need to be able to joke about it, you know, to be able to lighten things up, to be able to see the funny side of life. But otherwise, you know, you cannot do. if this is your job, right, you cannot work with that kind of serious, you cannot joke, no fun, day in, day out, every week is not possible. Yeah. So you need to be able to also find joy. And so that is, with that, I finish this, excuse me, second favorable condition, which is to cultivate merit and to increase merit, you know, through various different types of practices. Okay. Any question? Any complaint about the joy meditation? Do you feel more depressed after that? Oh, nothing. There's nothing in my life that's worth rejoicing. Well, then you're most probably depressed. Right? Then you need to go and see a doctor or a psychiatrist, okay? Because the inability to find anything good in one's life, inability to remember any moment of happiness, a moment of joy or good fortune, it's a sign that your mind is deeply entrenched in negative thinking. That you can't even bring in anything positive. Very few of us survive to this day without even a single moment of happiness or joy. Just lower your standard a little bit. That bag of potato chips, that's very satisfying. There's a little bit of joy and happiness. I was watching this anime. Oh, this is a good episode. I really like it. I watched it twice just now. So there's a moment of happiness. You can rejoice in this suffering life. At least I have 20 minutes of happiness watching this well-produced anime. That's good. Yes. Right. So that's also another thing, having too high a standard. Okay. So if no questions, so thank you very much for your attention. So I see you next week. Thank you.